Okay, so it's our Saturday night gathering, and just been thinking about the way that we approach meditation I thought maybe it'd be good to say a few words. The meditation is kind of a catch-all phrase, really, that doesn't really, it means a lot and doesn't mean much. And I think particularly from the Thai forest tradition, Ajahn Chah, a lot of emphasis on mindfulness and a lot of emphasis on mindfulness of the body. And then when we reflect on the Buddha's own approach, you realize, well, actually, the Buddha put tremendous amount of emphasis on the mindfulness, and it's like the oftentimes, as there's in the commentaries, there's a lot of emphasis on the kind of the one on the jhanas and the nimitta of the for the jhanas, and it's not that that is wrong or anything, but it's sort of like, well, it's interesting when the Buddha himself talks of, say, like the and nimitta for the, say, the meditation is the four foundations of mindfulness, because it's more like a sign. Or the focus of attention. So that nimitta, or the Buddha talking about the subha nimitta for the sign of beauty, something of pleasant, that which is pleasant, because it's and Ajahn Yaniko was referring to that as well, alluding to that. In the sense of, it's just so important to attend to that which is creating a sense of well-being, of ease, because that's where the mind settles. It's like there's a series of instructions that the Buddha gives for cultivation of the path and of cultivation of the mind and the meditation, and it's a series of kind of bright, happy states, and then the Buddha actually stopping and saying, the happy mind is easily concentrated, or it's easily settled. And then somehow we tend to have inherited a belief, it's pretty universal amongst most of us, that when I get my samadhi together, then I'm going to be happy. And And it's no, when you get your happiness together, then your samadhi sort of starts to show up. So this is a different approach and a different kind of emphasis on what are we attending to and how are we attending. So that then, you know, really learning how to relax and settle. And I think that's why there is a, to me anyway, why there's a lot of attention on the mindfulness of the body. And not just in a, okay, 32 parts of hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, it's more like, that is just a small aspect of the attention to the body, because I think it's important that we in our practice that we anchor our awareness in experience as opposed to thought. It's like, you know, trying to think yourself into a settled, peaceful mind it's already a contradiction of terms. I mean, it ain't going to happen. Learning how to inhabit the body, bringing attention into the body. And of course, the breath is the most common instruction that the Buddha gives. And using that breath as a vehicle for bringing attention inwards. And not so much on, oh God, I gotta focus on the breath. I gotta keep the breath tightly in mind. It's more using the breath to come in and internalize that experience of awareness. Where do we feel the breath comfortably? How do we feel the breath comfortably? How does it show itself? It's like taking an interest in how that experience shows itself rather than trying to force the mind into a preconceived idea of what we think we should be doing. So exploring and taking an interest, a certain curiosity in the experience of the breath and the body. Not getting super anatomical about it, in the sense of, you know, we all have kind of a mental map of the physiology and anatomy of a human form, but much more paying attention to the experience, the rhythm, the ease of that rhythm. And I think one of the things, and Ajahn Jeff has been sort of speaking about this like forever, and it's just that the breath is more breath energy as opposed to like air coming in and going out and taking a fixed path according to, you know, some physiology. It's much more, there's a breath energy, and we can be attentive to that kind of breath energy, because that's also, you know, in the term, like the word for breath is say like apana, like anapanasati. The breath is pana. Of course, that's Pali. In Sanskrit, it's prana, which is again it's more like life as well. So in the same way, like the first precept, I'm not taking the life of any living creature, panatipata. It's a breathing being. It's the life energy is that the breath coming in, the breath going out. And to inhabit the body, explore the body. Where do we feel it? How do we experience it? How can we be? What seems natural as a place to be alert and attentive, to be present with the breath? Because it's not just a watching of the, say, the breath and the body. It is an experiencing, because there is a tendency to think, even like with mindfulness, is as if it's me watching something, and there's already a kind of a duality there, or a separation, sort of me watching something. But it's in the Buddhist practice, it's much more direct, and that even like in the Anapana Sati Sutta, the Buddha talks about the the word he uses, patisangweti, it's sort of like, it's not watching, it's experiencing the body breathing in, experiencing the body breathing. And Ajahn Jeff translates it as sensitive. And it's like more like fully sensitive, because it's the word. The root of the word is, say, in patisangveti, veti is like to feel. And both pati and sang are amplifiers, like to fully feel, to be fully sensitive to experience fully the breath as it comes in, breath as it comes out, the body as we breathe in. And so that it's inhabiting the experience, rather than some aloof watching, so that meditation, when we engage in it, then there's a sense of settling, and it's also there's always an attention to balance. In that, where yes, we want to be aware, and there is a certain element of like a focused awareness, focused mindfulness, that is kind of taking an object, but it's also that shifts around, and to not be confused or flummoxed by that. That's what the mind does. But also within that, especially with the breath, because it's like a non-verbal experience. And we fill the mind with all sorts of verbiage, but the actual experience is non-verbal. So that to there is an underlying kind of, say, broader awareness that's there. And it's like, how do we keep those different areas of mindfulness communicating with each other and learning, so that there becomes a continuity of mindfulness, of awareness, of a steady clarity. I think one of the images that that Ajahn Chah used that I really always appreciated was his image for meditation was, he says, just imagine you go into a room, you got a nice room, it's got windows, it's got doors, but there's just one chair there. You just sit in that chair and don't move. Don't give that chair to anybody else. Don't give it up. Don't let anybody take it. Just stay in that chair, and then you can watch the people coming and going. And he said that's what meditation's like. You sit in that seat of awareness within the heart, within experience, and of course there's going to be thoughts come. Of course there's going to be moods come. Of course there's going to be, oh my God, I'm getting restless. What am I doing it right? Well, yeah, I mean, those, all of that comes and goes. And that's where sort of like just the, so like those five hindrances that we, you know, it's not that you have to be, I mean, you learn about them through familiarity. You have to understand them. But it's more being willing to just recognize them and just let them, okay, they come into that space of awareness of them and the energy of the breath, and then they go out. And it's just keeping your seat of awareness. And that's a place of stillness without forcing it to be still, without forcing it to be, like, you know, even forcing it to be mindful. Because that's so often we just try too hard. And we don't, and there's a certain level of, you know, we don't really trust the fact that we can be aware, and will be aware, would be aware of. So it is just, yeah, learning to get more and more familiar with that, sitting in that seat of awareness. And as I think of there's an idiom that the Buddha uses when he describes samadhi, concentration or steadiness of mind, stability of mind, immersion of mind, purified, bright, free from corruption, pliable, workable, steady, imperturbable. They're all sort of easy. These are all different qualities of the mind that, and okay, yeah, there's a purification in terms of a shedding of the distracting, of the disturbing, of the unskillful. It's bright. If someone talks about how great their meditation is and they're dull, I mean, or the mind, if you have any doubt at all whether you've experienced some settledness of mind, the mind will be bright. You're not going to be dull and confused. It's just, it's an intrinsic to the mind. It's bright. It's free from corruption, free from the hindrances, free from the sources of instability. It's pliable. It's utu, and it's that's like in Pali. It has that sense of softness as well. Softness, malleable. It's not hard and rigid. So that leads to a certain beauty. Workable is like kamaniya. It has more of a sense of like ready for work. It's ready to do what it needs to be done. I need to let go of this particular thought. I need to, that needs to be done. Okay, the mind's ready to do it. I need to buckle down here. It's ready to do it. I need to let go. Okay, it's ready to do it. And so it's this sense of, the mind. So there's this, and steady, imperturbable, a sense of not being easily shaken. So these are qualities of mind that one starts to recognize. It's sort of experiencing it from the inside, coming back to the body, a grounding attention in the body, and relaxing. Bringing a sense of ease into the mind. When the Buddha talks of the factors of the mind settling, becoming steady, moving toward samadhi, the mind is still, it's engaging in terms of thought is being directed, it's evaluating, it's recognizing that vitakka vichara. There's directed thought, there's evaluation. It's seeing and using thought to help clarify, as well as recognizing the thought, I don't need to do that. Be letting that go, or directing to attention to themes that do kind of uplift the mind, brighten the mind, because it is an aspect of the mind settling, is that there is that sense of well-being, and there's the Pali words are piti and sukha, and it's sort of rapture and pleasure, and or rapture and happiness. And you think, God, I've been meditating for years now, I've never had any rapture. that sounds really pretty extreme. But I think it's much more like qualities are like of delight and refreshed. Those are that's much more the flavor. It's important that they because like our translations can set up expectations or assumptions, but something like say like delight and refreshed. Those, that's really common in meditation as one is dropping kind of obsessions and unskillful interest in the things that aren't really very wholesome. But as that drops away, there's a real kind of refreshed and delighted quality to the mind, and there is an inner contentment that comes. One is settled and content with those, with that well-being, and that helps the mind to come together, to unify a bit more, to be more that inner harmony, ekagata, starts to manifest. So that's just like reframing or reconsidering what we how we're holding the meditation. But particularly, again, just to emphasize just how important it is to come back to the body, because that's where we immediately feel, oh, am I relaxed? Am I comfortable? Am I at ease? So I breathe in and just, okay, can I just drop the obsession? Or can I just drop the worry? Can I breathe out and let that kind of anxious or competitive? Because even, who are we competing with? We end up competing with ourselves. And this just what are we trying to gain? And you realize, and that's why Ajahn Chah put so much emphasis on steering us away. And it was not just the Westerners, but for the Thais as well. Steering them away from, that thinking in terms of attaining, achieving, gaining some special state. So it's much more about what we're willing to let go of. What are we willing to relinquish? And the more we're willing to relinquish, the more we experience at that steady, imperturbable heart. It's a very well-known teaching or phrase that Ajahn Chah coined. You let go a little, you get a little peace. You let go a lot, you get a lot of peace. You let go completely, you get complete peace. And this is very simple, simple equation. Of course, not so easy to do, but still, you want to be heading in the right direction. So it needs to be grounded in experience as opposed to a conceptual thought. Come back to the body, come back to the experience. And internalizing that sense of experience, and allowing that, and like inhabiting the practice, living with it from moment to moment, as we breathe in, as we breathe out, and we can modulate. We can modulate our energy, we can soften, or we can push. Because it's also that, say, like that breath energy is not just kind of a life force type thing. It's also just that say, expanding and contracting. A sense of energizing or tamping down a bit. Sometimes we get too excited, we get too enthusiastic, and we start we get too energetic, and you start bouncing too much, and the mind isn't settled. And so it's inhabiting the experience, and learning how to be steady within that. Returning to that quality of knowing. And this is where that, that reflection on the Buddha being the one who knows. It's this internal quality. Because in Thai, especially the Northeast Thai tradition, they use just the recitation of the word of the Buddha as a fundamental meditation technique, because it's on the in-breath, bud, out-breath, ho. And that's, it's a helpful anchor to stay with the present experience, but it's also a reminder of just being with that, the quality of knowing, inhabiting that kind of awareness that is present, it's alert, it's kind, there's a contentment, a happiness there. These are sort of reminders or guideposts to try to remind us of how we approach our meditation, because when it's grasped in the wrong way, then meditation can get really frustrating and we can get pretty grim sometimes. And certainly that isn't what the Buddha was hoping for us in giving his teachings, and it wasn't what the great teachers are hoping for. But it's this sense of applying ourselves to the practice and just recognize, understanding the mind, and that it's just as, because there is a natural element to the mind that when we treat it kindly, it responds kindly. And it takes on, it's like the image that the Buddha gives within the hindrances of the natural state of water is that it's clear and it's still, but then we can put in a color and or a dye or a something, an additive of some sort, and it will change color. And the Buddha uses that in terms of desire. But also, it's just, say, water, if you just leave it out, it's just this kind of cool and settled. But then if you put fire underneath it, then it's gonna boil, it's going to get hot. And it's not the natural state of water, but it's what you can do with water. He uses that as the image for the hindrance of ill will and anger. The mind gets hot and boiling, gets covered over with, it's like a pond scum. This is how it works. So this, it can be. But the natural state of water is clear, and it's still, it's limpid. And so that allowing awareness and attention to come back and appreciate that stillness and clarity. And to learn how to delight in it. To offer that for reflection this evening.